evening and welcome to The Gnostic Waves, your weekly fix of all things of a mystical, philosophical and psychological nature. Thank you for joining me this evening, most particularly because we have our special guest speaker from Olympia in Washington in the United States, Carly Samish. Hello, Carly.
Hi, Diana.
Hello and welcome back. It's been a while.
Yes, thank you. It's good to be back here and be on the show.
Yep. All right. Today, Carly is going to talk to us about the tarot card number 13. So as our regular listeners would know, that we've been going through the card sequentially. So we're up to number 13 now. And so Carly, please share with us your wisdom on tarot card number 13.
All right. 13 is such an interesting number, and as I was kind of researching about the card, I ended up just wanting to look at and reflect a little bit about the number 13 in general. So what I've put together for this in the talk is I want to start with just talking about the number 13, kind of just like the mystique around it a little bit in culture, even like popular culture. And then go through the teachings that Master Samael gave us about the card and what he talks about in his book, Tarot and Kabbalah. And then even going more into some esoteric things about the number 13 in relation to the 13 aeons. And I'll explain a little bit about that as we get to it. So that's just a little bit of the overview. So 13, one of the first thoughts I had as like a reference point for 13 was that there are roughly 13 full moons or new moons in a year, just the way the cycles of the solar year correspond with the lunar year. That's sort of what happens. And so the moon cycle and the moon has always really been it's something very mysterious. It's related very much with the feminine. In terms of the syncing of the moon with the menstrual cycles and how the growth of the moon mirrors the growth of pregnancy, like just from like, you know, a crescent, like a flat, in, you know, womb to growing and growing and growing to fullness. And then there's even this, that there's a correspondence as well with the moon to death and resurrection. So the mysteries of the feminine nature, death, resurrection, how the moon it essentially disappears into darkness and then is resurrected in the new moon and the light comes again. And this happens every single month. And so it's very mysterious. It's very interesting, very much tied into life and death. And there's an interesting history. I read an article about it in the Atlantic that various patriarchal cultures have a long history of wanting to destroy the moon. And it was such a fascinating article. And it was kind of funny in a way because it was just so extreme, but even as recent as the Cold War with the US and Russia, there was actually a bit of a Cold War about who could blow up the moon. I couldn't believe it when I read it, but just on such a unconscious, primal, deep level of not understanding and able to embrace darkness and death and fluctuation and resurrection and all of these things. And you know, and of course, like unconscious fears of the mysteries of sex and childbirth and femininity and blood and just all of these things. And so there's could be this like kind of unconscious need to destroy that. Of course, we destroyed the moon. I mean, I don't think that we would survive on Earth, but it's an interesting impulse that's kind of out there. So the number 13 on many levels represents something very mysterious and things that we can't control. So then I was looking into just, you know, 13 being considered unlucky. And this is a very pop culture, popular culture kind of thing, but I thought it was kind of interesting. So I kind of looked it up and I found a little a magazine called Mental Floss. It always has fun little facts. And it said that it kind of collected some different reasons why the number 13 is considered unlucky in popular culture. And actually a lot of them were tied into Christianity. So one is that Christ, who was the one to die, was the 13th at the table at the Last Supper. So Christ being the 13th, along with the 12 apostles there. There's sort of a saying, a popular saying, that there's 13 steps on the gallows, 12 up and one down. So that's a little grim kind of there. It said that the initial roundup of the Knights Templar, so to begin their crusades, began on Friday, October 13th in the year 1307. So that's just another indication of battle and war. And in this article, it says that in numerology, 12 is considered to be a representation of perfection and completion. So this was probably talked about Diana's last talk about the card number 12, but 12 is like the law of 12 is related with the perfection and completion of a cycle. So we see that in the zodiac cycle with the 12 signs, a process that goes through all 12 signs, all 12 types of energies is something that is complete and crystallized. So with 12 being something that is perfect, then 13 is like this extra thing that kind of causes maybe imbalance or imperfection, you know, something like that. Or it's kind of like saying, I've got 12, which is perfect, and maybe quote unquote lucky, and then try to, you know, make it even more lucky by adding something to make it 13, and then that just swings the pendulum to the other side to unlucky. So this is all just sort of, again, just all kind of like pop culture stuff. And then there are also traditions, Zoroastrian and also Mayan, which we'll get into a little bit later in the talk, that predict different kinds of apocalypses or chaos or degenerations of civilization kinds of thing in how they count the 13th type of millennium or the 13th cycle. Okay, so that's just touching on a few little things about 13 in general. There's a really lovely prayer that Master Samael shares in his book, Occult Medicine and Practical Magic, where he talks about different kinds of practices where you can work with elementals, which are the conscious aspect of plants and animals and minerals. And it's a really excellent book and really shines a light into his connection with the indigenous cultures of Colombia. And he has a practice in there for a protection practice using what's called the mommy tree. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, which is native to Colombia. I'd never heard of it before. And he gives us this practice. He says, and he talks about the angel Gabriel. He says, Gabriel is the regent of the moon. So, of course, we already talked about that relationship with 13 and the moon. And using this prayer clarifies our atmosphere to help with esoteric practices such as meditation and prayer. And I really like using this prayer, actually. Sometimes I like it. I think I started using it maybe just because it's more brief. And sometimes if I just want to start a practice and I just want to be brief, but I want to have an intention of clarifying the atmosphere a little bit so that I can concentrate my mind, I'll use this prayer. So it goes as follows. 13,000 rays has the sun. 13,000 rays has the moon. 13,000 times may my enemies, may the enemies I have repent. So that's the prayer. And again, it's in Occult Medicine and Practical Magic by Samael and Vior. And when he says, may 13,000 times may the enemies I have repent, of course, we interpret that to be our internal enemies, our unconsciousness, our infraconsciousness, our egoic manifestations. You know, I'm generally not thinking about people or enemies of myself, anything like that. It's an internal process. We're trying to clarify ourselves. So yeah, I find that to be a really effective prayer, really useful. Okay.
Thank you. I've never thought to use that as like a preparation to do a practice because, I mean, those things that are inside of us are what stop or make our practices difficult. So if we can clear the path a bit so that we can actually start, then, yeah, it's really helpful. Thank you.
Definitely. Yeah, yeah. There's some great practices in that book. Really wonderful stuff that if we don't have access to the particular native Colombian plant or tree that he's talking about, a lot of times there's still just really beautiful prayers and things. All right, so just moving on into talking about the actual Arcanum number 13 or the Tarot number 13. So in the chapter about the Arcanum number 13 in his book Tarot and Kabbalah, Samael and Vior, He's giving several teachings, and the bulk of it is a teaching about death by thirds. So he says that we die by thirds, and this is a reference to our three brains, our three processing centers of functioning in our organism. So we have a way that we process information intellectually, we process things emotionally, and we also process in a somatic or body way, which is sexually, instinctively, and with movement, like kinetically. So the teaching with this is that when he says we die by thirds, it's that usually we're like just as a temperament, as a person, we'll be kind of prone towards overusing and relying too much on one of the three brains. You know, some of us just tend to be overusing and relying on and kind of processing everything emotionally, or not everything, but most things maybe emotionally, or maybe processing everything intellectually, or maybe processing everything sort of physically. And that can be something that really overruns our system, and we'll see it in this lifetime, perhaps. Like, you know, he gives maybe an extreme example of, like, you know, a super athlete, someone who's just 100% dedicated to just the body and the feats of what the body can achieve, and not developing or balance with the three brains, and that can cause injuries, or even like a type of crippling, or just dysfunction, we'll say, like extreme dysfunction of the physical body, the physical brain, later in life. Of course, we can definitely see that sexually, overusing the sexual energy. This is something that's really, this teaching has actually been preserved somewhat in traditional Chinese medicine, where it's taught that if you overuse sexuality and just overindulge in sexuality, we could say, and are not paying attention to the balance of the body, then you'll have impotence later in life. So we can see that type of thing. We can see an overuse of the intellectual center that can result in memory loss or cognitive dysfunction later in life, overuse of the emotional center that can result in different types of emotional imbalances, difficulty resolving anxiety, or just always kind of being distraught with negative emotions, or just going with the emotional feeling of things rather than balancing it with, you know, some intellectual pondering, or maybe the physical reality of things. So, and when we say this too, I always find it necessary to point out, like, we're not trying to say, like, if we see someone older in life who's struggling mentally or physically, like, it's not to just say, oh, you know, obviously you shouldn't have done this, that, and the other in your lifetime. It's just a teaching about just the reality of the limited amount of what he calls values, or like vital values within our system. And then, of course, this can extend into our next lives. You know, we may not see damage done in this particular life, but then being born into a body that has some kind of dysfunction. So this teaching, I really want to make sure that we're coming from a perspective of compassion for other people, and just using it as a teaching, like, to remind ourselves to cultivate balance. And we, you know, we can't know the totality of the karma for other people, and sometimes it can be easy to just say, like, oh, if, you know, that person obviously shouldn't have done that, and they're paying for the consequences. But always remembering to extend that compassion, because we don't know, and our world is so inherently imbalanced that to try to find even just a basic balance between intellect, emotion, and body is really challenging. So, of course, you know, we have the tools, and gnosis, Master Samael gives us many tools. Meditation is absolutely crucial. All the different practices we do are so crucial, but it's not something that we're taught in this culture. It's not something that this culture really appreciates. It's more just kind of like go, 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 and until you die by thirds, basically. So he gives that teaching, and it's a really excellent teaching within this chapter. And then Master Samael speaks about different masters who have achieved immortality through their esoteric work. And that's always a really interesting topic. And honestly, very, like, I almost don't even know kind of what to make of it. Like there's masters that just have reached a level in their work that they are given an elixir of longevity, as Master Samael calls it, and utilize that same physical body to continue their work. So it's just very, you know, it's kind of just mind-boggling to me, but it's out there. Master Samael speaks about it, teaches about it in this chapter. And then he goes on to speak about mystical death. So that's really the core teaching. And if any time we're going to be talking about death, and which of course this arcanum number 13 is the death card. It's the death card in the more traditional tarot decks, like the Rider-Waite and more the like Western tarot decks. Number 13 is always the death card. In the Egyptios Kier deck that we use, that was developed esoterically, that Samael endorses and uses, it's called resurrection, which is interesting. But mystical death is the purification and the refinement of ourselves psychologically. That is what it is, and that is the highest form of death in a way. I mean, physical death is natural, of course. It's the going to be what we all go through and what we have all gone through in the past. But the mystical death is that the freeing, the liberating of our essence and the making conscious what is unconscious, bringing light into what is dark. But it is a process. It mirrors aspects of physical death because there is renunciation of desire and having to separate ourselves from attachment and the things of life and the things that, you know, that compel us to move forward, ambition and pride and all of these things, and having to let go and submit to the greater power of the Divine Mother and allow her to extract the pure essence from this egoic conditioning. So it's a really beautiful process, really important. And like I say, it's a process of refinement and purification, mystical death. So I'm going to read a little bit from this chapter here from Samael. Death is the crown and the path of life. This path is formed by the hooves of the horse of death. The Egyptian book of the dead is for those who are alive yet are dead. It is necessary to know how to understand this book. It is related to the deceased initiates who already are dead, yet they are still alive. They have already entered into the region of the dead, and they go out into the sunlight in order to give their teachings. The first thing that we must do in order to die is to dissolve the eye. This eye is a conjunction of demons, which the Egyptians refer to as the red demons of Seth. We must dissolve the eye in order to awaken consciousness, in order to receive direct knowledge. The red demons of Seth are all of the demons that we have within. They are Satan. They must be killed. Boris must defeat those demons. Okay, so I'm just going to comment on that a little bit. So Samael does not mince his words, and he's speaking really strongly here. And it's true, like the unconscious aspects, the egoic aspects act demonic. You know, they act against God, they act against Christ, they act against what is good, what is towards the absolute, and they act in selfishness. But sometimes it can just be a little bit jarring to hear our psychology referred to as demonic. But it's just him, you know, Samael is just clarifying the reality of things and saying again that Satan is not a person, a personage is, you know, running around tempting people. Satan is just this aspect of us within that acts against God, essentially. And killing the egos it's not denying, I mean, it's denying parts of ourselves, but it's not like suppressing or pushing away or boxing off these bad, evil, quote-unquote evil parts of ourselves. It's looking at it, you know, really honestly with courage and, you know, seeing what is inside of ourselves, seeing those selfish, egoic aspects of ourselves, and in the practice of mystical death, utilizing the power of the Divine Mother to dissolve the ego, killing the ego, but through first accepting it, understanding it, comprehending it, really being able to evaluate it from all angles with the consciousness so that the essence is freed from that conditioning and that pattern. And Horus is the Christ in the Egyptian mythology. Okay, so Samael goes on. Seth has two aspects. His negative aspect is Satan, and in his positive aspect, he corresponds with the dorsal spine. This tenebrous and satanic Seth must be killed. This is the lunar ego, which is constituted by thousands of demons and which Horus must defeat with the help of Isis, the Divine Mother. These demons must die. Those eyes must be reduced to dust, their seeds must be scorched, and then one must be bathed in the waters of Lethe in order to forget, and in Juno in order to fortify virtues to then ascend to heaven. So just again another note, that I don't know if I'm saying those rivers right, Lethe or Lethe, and those are the rivers in the Greek Hades. It's the two rivers that the souls pass through when they descend into Hades, which is the Greek term for the underworld. Sometimes Samael just synthesizes different mythologies in his terminology. Okay, going on with the quote. In order to ascend each of the heavens, one has to first descend into the infernos. That is not all. Tremendous battles must come. The 13th card contains the Gospel of Judas. Judas represents the death of the ego. The death of the ego is his gospel. The script that he performed was commanded by the great master Jesus. Judas is now working with the demons in the infernal worlds in order to redeem them. He has succeeded with a few. When he finishes his work, he will depart with Jesus into the absolute because he will have greatly earned it. Okay, this quote is absolutely fascinating. So this book, I'm looking, the Tarot and Kabbalah book was published, I don't have the original publication date, but it had to have been in the 70s at the latest. I have to look, it was 1976. Okay. And the Gospel of Judas didn't come out until, I believe, like the early 2000s. And the Gospel of Judas really rocked the world because it was the first time that any kind of scripture had been openly revealed, where the teaching was that, just exactly what Samael says, that Judas was working with a script given to him by Master Jesus. He truly was a loyal disciple, the favorite disciple of Master Jesus. And in order for Jesus to go through his process as the Christ, to go through that passion, he needed someone to play that part, to play the part of the betrayal. And it was actually a absolutely tremendous sacrifice because the whole world hates Judas and thinks that he is the enemy. And yet he had to do that. And Master Samael here, you know, whatever, 30 years before that information came out, was teaching about it. It's really amazing. And then that Judas is now working consciously in the infernal worlds. Like that master is just so attuned with something really, really deep about the work. And, you know, it's not just an ascent. Doing the work and waking the consciousness and walking the initiatic path is really not just triumph after triumph and, you know, things looking really masterful and good. It really is a descent into darkness and the underworld, which includes all of the negative emotions that we deal with, betrayals, you know, ugliness, just all of these things that we may not associate immediately with like kind of a spiritual life or spirituality, but it's 100% necessary. Not to get lost there, not to get identified, of course, but we really have to enter into that world in order to ascend. And so the teachings of Judas are really, really powerful for that.
So we'll just go to a music break and we'll continue on with the feature of the opera Akhenaten, which Carly kindly introduced me to a while ago. So we'll be back after this short break and then Carly will continue on this really fascinating topic of the card number 13. On the Gnostic Waves, joined by Carly Samish talking on the card, tarot card number 13. And so thank you, Carly.
Thanks, Dana. All right, moving on to the tarot card itself. So the number 13, as I mentioned, in Gnosis we study the Egyptios Kier deck, which was also kind of mysterious in itself, how it came out. I tried to research it, and there's not a lot of information. It was just something that someone who obviously was in the work, you know, an initiate of some sort in Argentina, just created this deck, and it's pretty unique, and I haven't really found a deck that has the same types of information in it in terms of tarot decks. So yeah, so in this deck, in this card, number 13 is called Immortality. And number 13 comes after the number 12, which we spoke about a little bit in the beginning, but as number 12 being the process of completion or crystallization. And in the tarot, it's called the Hanged Man. And on the esoteric significance of that, of course, there's many levels to it, but I would sum it up as essentially sacrifice and the sacrifices that are necessary for the completion of the great work. So there's going to be some aspect of the teaching of the 12 that has something to do with that. Then we go into 13, which is death of the ego, the possibility of rebirth, and death of the different aspects of ourselves and our lives. And then we have 14, which is temperance, and that is going to be related with balance and integration of the forces before we then confront the Lucifer in the card number 15. So that's sort of how I would trace just that little miniature section of the tarot, is the process of sacrificing and that energy, or that, I don't quite know the word for it, but just that process of number 12, and then purifying and refining with the death of the ego. That process is, you know, very profound, and then requires that balance, that reintegration, that process of the 14, because then, boom, in 15, it's confronting the Lucifer, which is a really intimate aspect of confronting our inner darkness, and to a certain extent, encountering the darkness of the world, and just that universal unconsciousness, which can be really shattering if we're not properly prepared. So that's what all this is about. All right, so from the book Tarot and Kabbalah, Samael and Vior has said this description of the plate. So this is like the description of the card. In this arcanum, the sheaves of wheat and the flowers represent rebirth. The flowers symbolize the beginning of life. The wheat symbolizes the end. A hierarch of the law cuts some stalks of wheat that have large and small grains, which are called bobbin candlenas. They represent the values, the capital, that each human being carries in the three brains, intellectual, motor, and emotional. And then he goes on to speak about what we've spoken about earlier with the dying in thirds, but I'll read his words. Whosoever carries small grains lives little, dying within a few days, months, or within the first year of life. One lives by thirds and dies by thirds. Whosoever squanders their intellectual capital falls into insanity, schizophrenia, etc. Whosoever squanders their motor center or center of movement ends up paralyzed, deformed, etc. Whosoever squanders their emotional center suffers from illnesses of the heart. This arcanum has a physical and internal representation. It is the arcanum of Judas Iscariot, which represents the death of the ego. The scythe is the funeral symbol of the angels of death. Indeed, death is the return to the womb. Life and death are two phenomena from the same source. So, you know, we look at the picture of the card, and these cards are, I mean, we have to just meditate and reflect on them to really grasp the depth of it. But there's a picture of a person with a scythe who is cutting some grains of wheat, and then there's also flowers sprouting up. And there's three flowers sprouting up, and it's a total of five grains of wheat, and the fifth is being cut. So my just reflection on this was just related to five being related to karma, and the processes of mystical death are starting to break that down, to break down those tracks that karma lays out for us, and then that allows for the new growth. Three is the law of creation, so those new flowers growing up, and flowers also represent virtues. So that's just, you know, one of the little meanings that came to me. It's also interesting too, the blade of the scythe is kind of dipped below the bottom third of the card, and so the cards are always divided into thirds, and the bottom part seems to represent like lower processes, not like lower in value, but like more working with the unconsciousness, and then the top part of the card is more like superior influences. And so the blade of the scythe is like dipped into the unconsciousness, the subconscious, and working with karma on that level by working in the processes of mystical death. And then I know Diana likes to talk about the transcendental axiom, and that was a good reminder. Because I kind of had forgotten when I prepared this talk, but this transcendental axiom is actually just wonderful. So the transcendental axiom for number 13, night has passed and a new day has arrived, then you shall be dressed with weapons of light. really wonderful, wonderful axiom. Like I know when I've drawn this card before, and I've just like I read that axiom, and it's always just felt really empowering. Like we've gone through the dark night. There's a new day. It's a new opportunity. It's just a new hope, but with new strength. And being dressed with weapons of light. It's just really like light is the weapon we need. Light is the weapon we need against the ego. It's the weapon we need to walk the path and be able to face ourselves. So I consider this a positive influence. You know, I would always consider this a really positive, helpful influence if I drew this in a reading. All right, now we're going to go into a even more kind of esoteric teaching. And this is talking about 13 as the number of the absolute. And this is just so interesting because the absolute is that which is beyond creation. And our minds can't fathom it because our minds are of creation. And even many of the aspects of God and the Divine Mother and the being that we all study and reflect on and are working with are all still of creation. And it's only that God that is, I mean, we can only call it nothingness, but not just like that there's no God, but just the God is so profoundly beyond any concept we could even possibly try to imagine. So it's just the absolute, unmanifestation. And the number of that is 13. So this is very mysterious. So I'll read some excerpts here. In the Pistis Sophia Unveiled from Master Samael and Vior, he says, the 10 Sephiroths are emanation plus the Ein Sof Or, and the Ein Sof are in reality the 12 aeons. The 12 aeons are in reality 12 regions. The 13th aeon is terribly divine. Okay, so I realize that in order to understand that sentence at all, we probably need to know a bit about Kabbalah. So I'll just hope that anyone who's listening has a little basic understanding of Kabbalah. But it's basically saying with the 10 Sephiroths plus the two divisions of the absolute, the Ein Sof and the Ein Sof Or, that equals 12. And then that 13th aeon is the Ein, the absolute, that which is beyond all unfoldments. And then there's another interesting quote from the Pistis Sophia Unveiled. The 13th aeon reminds us of the 13 heavens of the Aztecs or Nahuas from ancient Mexico. There also exist 13 Catuns among the Mayans of Yucatan, Palenque, and Central America in general. These are the 13 prophetic Catuns, 13 periods of time for each human race. Obviously, the prophecies for each one of these past Catuns of our Aryan race were exactly fulfilled. Actually, we are approaching the 13th Catun. The Mayas say that between the years 2040 and 2043, the 13th Catun will enter into activity. The great catastrophe that will destroy the actual humanity that lives in the five continents of the world will occur during the 13th Catun. Our solar system has 13 worlds, which are as follows. Earth, Mercury, Venus, Sun, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, Vulcan, Persephone, and Clarion. The 13th Catuns, the 13 worlds, the 13 heavens of Anuak keep the relation with the 13 Sephiroth of the Hebraic Kabbalah as follows. Ein, Ein Sof Or, Keter Hakmah, Bina, Hesed, Geburah, Tiferet, Netzach, Had, Yesod, Malkut. These are the 13 aeons, or supersensible atomic regions, which are mutually penetrating and co-penetrating without being confused. Beyond these 13 aeons is the unmanifested absolute. So this is really, so many of the teachings in the Pistis Sophia, they really just are for the consciousness. And, you know, I can try to explain the best I can, but a lot of it is just trying to reach that state of being or consciousness where these words can impact in a way that sort of impacts us consciously and sort of changes our level of being just by kind of absorbing these teachings. I don't mean to sound abstract or vague about it, but some of this just is on it, frankly, stuff that I don't totally understand with my mind, but hard to explain intellectually anyways.
Kind of like koans, aren't they?
It's like what?
They kind of seem like koans.
Yes,
They
exactly.
help you, like your mind just can't compute it, and then hope it kind of might just shut down, and then the consciousness might feel something of the truth in there.
That's exactly, yeah, that's very well put. That's exactly it. So, some of the gist we can get from this is that all these different cultures, I mentioned earlier the Zoroastrian teaching of the 13th millennium, a time of chaos. We have these 13 khatuns, which is Katun, teachings from the Mayas, and then the teachings of the Kabbalah. And so it's all kind of corresponding into just this era where the cycle is complete, and when we enter into this 13th era, there's going to have to be a deconstruction and a new, so that a new cycle can begin. And speaking about the catastrophe in the end times, obviously that can be a whole other talk or a whole other series of talk. It's a huge topic, but the most useful thing to take away from any reflection about or thinking about the catastrophe of the world or of civilizations or of life is really, again, just an internal process. We have to go through an internal catastrophe in order to do this work. And that's a lot of really what the essence of this card is about, and this death and going into the underworld and going into the inferior regions and really kind of, I'm going to say embracing it, like getting identified with it, or thinking that that's all that there is, or mistaking that for, like, the path, or giving up on God. It's not like that, but it's de certainly not shying away from all of those things. And so when we look in ourselves internally, it is chaos and it is a catastrophe, and it's like a slum in a city, or like a corrupt corporation, or like an evil dictator, kind of. I mean, psychologically, in our darkest aspects, those things exist, and the catastrophe of that is going to be the light of the being and the Christ that comes in, as he says, to throw fire upon the world. And that's the type of process that we need to go through internally. And what happens externally is, it's up to God. It's up to the Lords of Karma, and it's definitely not something I would say to sit around and worry about. I would say it's something to just motivate us to work. Okay.
I've noticed that like people go like that kind of inner catastrophe or that inner crisis. Sometimes that's what brings people to search for these mysteries, like life hasn't gone to
Yes.
plan, and so they've gone through that kind of upheaval within themselves and ready to start something new. Or sometimes it happens after they've started, come to the teachings and go through that, like, massive change or real kind of, upheaval in their lives. Just that I comment.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, a lot of times there just is that point when, all the things that we thought we wanted in our life aren't working out, or, different things happen with, like, changes or deaths or separations or just in whatever form, loss. And all of a sudden, it's like we kind of, look around and like look for what's important. And yeah, certainly that can bring people to the Gnostic teachings, spiritual teachings, religion. And then you're right as well. Like, I've definitely seen people come in and to the teachings, and just the nature of working to wake up and to be conscious starts to provoke these processes, and we're kind of asked to decide, what's going to be important. And I always consider that a really positive process. Like, I mean, I don't wish ill, or like difficulty or suffering on anyone, but if we're really trying to do a work of transformation, we do have to face some of these difficulties in our lives. All right, so I have this quote here from a document called Pista Sophia, from Rafael Vargas, who's the international coordinator in our Gnostic society. And he says, 13 is a very complete and representative number, in that it is the universe, personal and external, as a single universe. If we understand this, and above all, if we draw it on the blackboard, the student begins to put it into context. It will seem like all of this is external to him, but we tell him it is not external to you, it is part of you. So I'm just going to comment on that a little bit, that, this very cosmic 13 number that we were sort of discussing earlier with the with what Samael was saying, that 13th is actually representing the absolute. But again, the important thing is just it is something that is so complete. It's even beyond the completion of the number 12 because it includes this mystery, and that is within us. So we say that the God is within us, the illuminating void is within us, the unmanifested God, the Ein, is within us. And here's just kind of another way of saying it, that 13th aeon is within, deep within our consciousness. So 13 is just, it's a number that just has so much mystery and magic around it. It has a kind of completion that is somehow even more complete than 12, which has that like perfect geometry. And it has a lot to do with creation and governing creation because it comes from that which is beyond creation. So all of these things are just really interesting to reflect on. And yeah, I think what Diana said, you're right. It's just it is very much like a koan. It's like this mysterious saying that we can kind of talk about, we can share, and then in the moment it's just meant to put inside of our consciousness to try to go beyond the mind to truly understand it. So I hope that has shined a little bit of light on 13, or at least intrigued us a little bit to reflect further on it.
Oh, definitely. Thank you so much. I was just reflecting on that, how you mentioned at the start that link between life and death, like, and related to the moon, which yeah, it's like they just go hand in hand, I suppose. Like, we separate life and death, but in this whole scheme of life and creation, it's kind of more, they're more connected and flow together.
Definitely. It's and preparing for death in a conscious way and working with mystical death paradoxically makes our life so much richer and more profound. And when we are not trying to avoid death, avoid thinking about it, avoid preparing for it, denying it, then in a weird way it's kind of like more like we're like zombies and like half alive in our lives and more like stuck and have more fear. So like acknowledging that flow is really a great way to live.
Yeah, I think that talking about death and confronting it, like, as in I'm talking about the physical death, is yeah, something we need to do more often, because it's such a, like, we have just such a set way of processing it as like something undesirable, negative, and such. And yeah, it's a shame, because it's an opportunity to really yeah, look at our life, reassess our life.
I mean, in some ways, death is seen as like a failure. It's so kind of insane. Like death, you failed, like you didn't survive or something. Like, I don't know, I just see that a lot, like the medical profession and stuff. And yeah, and that's just like a completely backwards way of seeing it. It has a lot of lessons to teach us.
All right, we'll just go to another music break, and this is another track from the opera Akhenaten. So we'll be back after the music break on the Gnostic Waves. Okay, so you're back on the Gnostic Waves, and that brings us to the end of tonight's show. Thank you once again, Carly, for your very interesting and well-researched talk on the tarot card number 13, and also the number 13 in general, which, as we know in these studies, every number is a law, isn't it? It's got a principle to for us to understand. So, yes, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks again to our listeners for joining in, whether that's live or to the pre-recording on the website, gnosticwaves.com. Also, Carly has a website,
Gnostic Muse.
Gnostic Muse, yeah. So GnosticMuse.com. So do check it out. She's got lots of interesting articles there. So do have a read if you get a chance. All right, until next week, thanks again and see you.